So, imagine for a second that you are holding the corporate credit card for a massive Fortune 100 company.
Oh, that's the dream, right? Just a massive budget at your fingertips.
Right, exactly. And you are actively searching for this premium multi-city corporate flight package. But the ad you see at the top of your search results is pushing like a budget backpacker deal tailored strictly for college interns.
Yeah, which is just a complete miss.
It is. And that exact disconnect costs performance marketers millions of dollars every single day.
Oh, easily millions. Because they aren't targeting the right person behind the screen.
Exactly. And look, if you are a performance marketer tuning into this deep dive, you probably already know how to run a highly optimized campaign on Google Ads.
Right, you've got your match types memorized, your ad copy is dialed in.
You've got your conversion tracking running flawlessly over there. But treating Microsoft advertising like it's just, a simple Google clone is honestly one of the most expensive mistakes you can make.
It really is. Bringing over your Google assumptions just means you are leaving serious money on the table.
Because you're ignoring what makes the platform unique.
Right. That assumption fundamentally ignores the whole underlying data architecture of the Microsoft ecosystem. Advertisers often just like migrate their campaigns, set their bids, and then completely miss out on the proprietary targeting levers that are entirely unique to this platform.
Which is exactly why our mission today is to unpack those specific capabilities. We are diving deep into the unique audience targeting mechanics of Microsoft advertising.
And there is a lot of ground to cover there.
There really is. We're going to deconstruct how in-market segments actually work, dissect the engineering behind LinkedIn profile targeting, and outline the strict requirements for UET-based remarketing.
Those are the big three for sure.
Yeah. And to keep this all grounded, we're going to run these technical concepts through a highly specific scenario. Basically, building a campaign for a premium corporate travel management company.
I like that. We want high-ticket clients, right?
Exactly. We want to eliminate all that wasted spend on unqualified clicks.
Well, a premium travel scenario perfectly highlights the need for advanced targeting. But before we even think about layering on demographic or intent data, the platform has to actually know what is happening on your domain.
Right, you need the data collection layer firmly in place first.
Yeah, because if the advertising platform is blind to user behavior, like none of these advanced audience strategies will function at all. The very first hurdle you have to clear is mastering Microsoft's tracking infrastructure.
Because without it, we're basically flying blind.
Completely blind. In the Microsoft ecosystem, that foundational layer is Universal Event Tracking, or UET.
Right, and for people used to the old way of doing things.
Yeah, if you're used to deploying multiple piecemeal conversion pixels for all these different events, UET really demands a different approach. It utilizes a single unified JavaScript snippet that you place site-wide.
Usually in the head section of your global template, right?
Exactly. It's the absolute mandatory prerequisite for both conversion tracking and any form of remarketing within paid search on Microsoft.
So you configure it once, and it just runs in the background.
Pretty much. It acts as your central nervous system. It continuously records user page views and network requests, and it just feeds that raw behavioral data back to Microsoft's servers.
Okay, so installing a global JavaScript snippet is pretty standard procedure for anyone in our field. But the classic anxiety for any performance marketer is validation.
Oh, the waiting game.
Right. You paste the code into your tag manager, you publish the workspace, and then you just stare at the platform waiting for a status update. Launching a high-budget campaign and just praying the data is flowing is a terrifying strategy.
It's terrible, but historically, advertising platforms kind of forced you to rely entirely on server-side processing to confirm if things worked.
Which takes forever.
Yeah, you would drop the tag, wait for user traffic to generate a payload, wait for the server to process it, and then eventually see a status update in your dashboard.
And waiting for that server-side validation is just agonizing. I prefer to validate the client-side mechanism instantly, you know?
Right, which is where the UET Tag Helper browser extension comes in.
Yes. I love this tool. I always compare it to having a direct radio line to the bouncer at an exclusive nightclub door.
Okay, a bouncer. I like that analogy.
Yeah, because normally you'd have to wait 24 hours for the nightclub's management, which is the server to batch process, the guest list, just to see if your VIPs actually got inside.
Right.
But with the UET Tag Helper in Edge or Chrome, you don't have to wait. Your browser literally pings the bouncer locally. You load your landing page, you open the extension, and if it hands you a green badge with a count of one or more, you know your tag is firing correctly in real time.
It tells you immediately that the client-side script is executing properly.
Exactly. It just gives you that immediate peace of mind.
It really does. The bouncer analogy perfectly illustrates the difference between local script execution and server-side logging. But, and this is a big but, there is a critical secondary validation step.
Ah, right. The 24-hour check.
Yeah. While the browser extension confirms the snippet fired on the user's machine, you are still required to check the in-platform dashboard after a day or so. The tracking status in Microsoft Advertising will eventually read either tag active or tag inactive.
And what if it says inactive after 24 hours?
If 24 hours pass and that status is still tag inactive, it means absolutely no customer activity data successfully reached the server.
Oh, wow. So even if the browser extension gave you the green light, it's still failing.
Exactly.
Which implies a structural failure between the client firing the tag and the server actually receiving the payload. So what usually causes that kind of disconnect?
It generally points to some sort of network-level blockage. Like, for instance, your website might have a strict content security policy.
Right, the CSP.
Yeah, which is basically a security protocol your server uses to block unauthorized scripts from running. If Microsoft's domain isn't explicitly whitelisted in that policy, the tag fires locally, but the data payload is just blocked from leaving the browser.
Okay, that makes sense. Or it could be a setup issue on our end.
Exactly. It could be a misfiring trigger in your tag manager. But the bottom line is, if the tag is inactive on the server side, everything stalls.
You can't build audiences.
Right. Your conversion columns remain at zero, and your remarketing list will just sit entirely empty. So that 24-hour server check is your final non-negotiable validation.
Okay, so assuming the network payload clears, the bouncer lets the data through, and our UET foundation is rock solid, we are finally tracking behavior.
Yes, the foundation is set.
But analyzing traffic on our own site is really only half the battle. The traffic source itself is where the true power of this platform lies. And I'd argue this is the single largest structural advantage Microsoft holds over Google.
Oh, without a doubt. You were talking about the integration of professional graph data.
I am. LinkedIn profile targeting.
It's a game changer.
It really is. Microsoft Advertising remains the exclusive non-LinkedIn platform capable of utilizing LinkedIn profile data directly for search targeting.
Yeah.
You can actually target users on Bing based on their verified professional identities.
And the scale is just staggering.
Right. You can target by over 80,000 distinct companies, 148 different industries, and 26 specific job functions.
And you can layer up to 1,000 companies per campaign, spreading them across up to 20 ad groups.
It's incredible. But how does that actually work on the back end? Because they're searching on Bing, not browsing LinkedIn.
Right. The mechanism bridging intent and identity is what makes this so powerful. Consider the back end reality. Microsoft owns both Bing and LinkedIn.
Right.
So a user searching for corporate hotel rates on Bing is demonstrating clear search intent. But when you overlay the Microsoft identity graph, which connects Windows logins, Office 365 profiles, and LinkedIn data, you completely strip away the anonymity.
Oh, that's wild. So you know exactly who was searching.
Exactly. You suddenly know if that search query was typed by some junior intern doing preliminary research, or by the actual director of procurement at a Fortune 1000 company who actually authorizes the budget.
Okay, so applying this to our premium corporate travel scenario changes the entire bidding strategy. If I am selling, you know, $500,000 corporate travel management contracts, I want to eliminate all unqualified clicks immediately. My instinct as a marketer is to be as hyper-specific as the tool allows.
Right, the sniper approach.
Yeah. I want to target only chief executive officers. And furthermore, I only want CEOs within the commercial aviation industry. And I only want them if they work at a curated list of exactly 5 Fortune 100 airlines.
You're narrowing it down aggressively.
I'm stacking the dimensions. I stack job function, the industry dimension, and a tiny company list. And I block everyone else. That seems like the ultimate zero-waste audience pool to me.
Well, that approach definitely makes logical sense from an efficiency standpoint, but it fundamentally misunderstands the platform's compliance mechanics.
Wait, really? Why?
Because stacking those specific dimensions walks you straight into a very strict privacy trap. If you layer a C-level job function, a single industry, and a micro list of target companies, your ad group's privacy status parameter will automatically switch to inactive.
Inactive, meaning the ad group is disqualified from entering the auction entirely.
Precisely. Zero ads will serve.
Wow.
Microsoft enforces rigorous privacy thresholds algorithmically. The platform is designed to prevent advertisers from inadvertently or, you know, intentionally hyper-targeting a single identifiable individual.
Oh, right. Because at that point, I basically am just targeting one specific guy at one specific airline.
Exactly. You cannot use search ads to stalk the CEO of one specific airline. The system calculates the total potential user base of your combined dimensions. And if the intersection of those LinkedIn parameters creates an audience pool that falls below their minimum compliant delivery threshold, the platform forcefully shuts the ad group off.
So my hyper-targeted sniper strategy ultimately suffocates my own campaign. The audience pool is simply too small to be legally compliant.
Yep, you boxed yourself in.
So to reverse that inactive privacy status, I'd have to dilute my targeting criteria to artificially inflate the pool size.
Right. Expanding the pool is exactly how you fix it. Broadening at least one of those targeting dimensions restores compliance.
Like adding more companies.
Yeah, you might expand your target company list from 5 airlines to 50. Or you could add adjacent job functions layering in operations, finance, or purchasing alongside your executive targeting. The moment the mathematical intersection of those users crosses the privacy threshold, the status updates, and your ads re-enter the auction.
Okay, that makes sense. So identifying the director of procurement using LinkedIn tells us exactly who the searcher is. Identity is solved.
Right.
But a procurement director is not perpetually in a buying state. They might just be casually checking a competitor's pricing or researching industry trends. We need a signal that indicates when they are actively prepared to spend money.
Because identity without timing is just expensive brand awareness.
Exactly. So establishing the when requires a different data set altogether, which leads us right into in-market audiences.
Yeah. If LinkedIn targeting establishes professional identity, in-market audiences establish immediate purchase readiness. These are carefully curated segments derived directly from Microsoft's proprietary first-party intent signals.
But how exactly does the platform categorize someone as in-market versus just a casual browser?
Well, the classification algorithm aggregates a massive behavioral footprint. It analyzes raw Bing search queries, historical ad click patterns, and page view telemetry across all Microsoft services.
So like the Edge browser and MSN.
Exactly. The machine learning models are basically looking for velocity and specificity. Someone searching for best hotels once is a casual browser.
Sure.
But someone repeatedly searching for corporate rates downtown Chicago, clicking on 3 consecutive hotel ads and viewing pricing pages over a 48-hour window, that person is demonstrating accelerating purchase intent. The system actively tags that user profile as being in market for a specific product category.
The scale of that proprietary data must be just massive.
It is globally available across over 90 markets. And looking specifically at your premium travel scenario, the platform's internal data is highly compelling.
Give me numbers.
Over 75% of users actively shopping for travel credit cards currently fall into an identifiable Microsoft in-market audience category.
75%. Capturing that much active intent within a closed ecosystem gives us a huge pool of validated prospects.
And the performance metrics really demonstrate why layering these lists is crucial. Applying travel intent segments to a baseline search campaign yields an average click-through rate lift of 4.2 times.
Wow, 4.2x just on CTR.
Yeah. Furthermore, combining travel intent segments with credit card in-market segments can push your conversion rate lift to 6.7 times above an unaudited baseline.
That is insane.
The intent is just highly qualified. For your corporate travel campaign, you would prioritize layering on categories such as, you know, travel air travel or travel hotels and resorts.
Okay, a 6.7x conversion rate lift fundamentally changes the return on ad spend calculation. Knowing those lists are that potent, my immediate goal as a marketer is to synthesize them with our own internal data.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, let's create a combined list.
Yeah.
I want to build an audience rule that basically says, target users who are currently categorized in the air travel in-market segment, A&D, who have also visited our proprietary pricing page in the last 30 days.
It sounds like the perfect list.
Merging their first-party intent data with our own site visitation data creates the ultimate high-converting super audience.
Right. Well, unfortunately, the back-end architecture of the platform strictly prohibits that specific merge. You hit a hard data silo limitation.
Wait, I can't combine them.
No, in-market audiences absolutely cannot be added to combined lists. The platform keeps its proprietary, first-party intent classifications firmly segregated from your third-party advertiser data.
That's so frustrating.
I know. The combined lists feature allows you to merge custom audiences, customer match lists, and standard remarketing pools, but the system locks in-market segments out of that specific tool entirely.
Okay, so that structural limitation prevents us from building a single unified audience entity. If we cannot merge them at the list level, we have to engineer a workaround at the ad group level.
Exactly. The strategic workaround requires parallel application.
How does that work?
If you want to isolate a user who is both in market for travel and has previously visited your domain, you must apply those two audiences as separate entities to the exact same ad group.
Well, I see.
Yeah. You associate the in-market list and you independently associate your site visitor remarketing list. You then manage the intersection of those users by applying concurrent bid adjustments on both lists simultaneously.
That demands a lot more manual bid management.
It does, but it honors the platform's data segregation rules while still allowing you to prioritize the user who actually meets both criteria.
Okay, got it. So we have layered the LinkedIn data to find the procurement officer. We have layered the in-market data to ensure they are actively buying. We get them to our landing page. They add a $15,000 corporate retreat package to their digital cart.
Everything is going perfectly.
And then they just close the browser tab.
Yeah.
The highest possible intent, completely abandoned.
It happens all the time.
If we cannot build the combined list to track them down, we have to rely on dedicated dynamic remarketing, right?
Absolutely. Abandoned carts represent the closest a user can get to a conversion without actually generating revenue. Recapturing them requires dynamic remarketing, specifically utilizing shopping cart abandoner lists.
Okay.
But to activate any dynamic remarketing list in Microsoft Advertising, the underlying cookie pool, you know, the segmented group of browser identifiers your tag has collected, must reach a minimum threshold of 1,000 unique users.
Okay, 1,000 users. That's just a matter of traffic volume.
Usually, yes. Only after crossing that population threshold does the list actually become eligible to serve impressions.
But the real failure point I see constantly involves the technical implementation. Like, a marketer installs the base UET tag we discussed earlier. The browser extension gives them the green validation badge.
They think they're good to go.
Right. They navigate into the dashboard. They create a rule for a cart abandoner list, and they wait.
Hmm.
And weeks pass, and the list remains entirely empty. Or worse, the platform misclassifies those high-value abandoners as just generic all visitors.
Yeah, and that failure stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of what a base tag actually does.
Which is?
The global UET snippet is excellent at recording that a page view occurred. It logs the URL and the timestamp. However, it possesses zero contextual awareness.
So it doesn't know what page it's on.
Exactly. It does not inherently know if the URL it just tracked is a top-of-funnel blog post or the final checkout confirmation page. It just sees a page load.
Oh.
So to successfully build a cart abandoner list, you are required to manually append custom JavaScript parameters directly into the tag payload, specifically firing on the cart page.
So we basically have to force the tag to declare the context of the page to the server.
Exactly. The payload must explicitly define the page type and identify the specific product. The syntax requires you to push the parameter page type set to cart.
Okay, page type cart.
Yep. And alongside that, you must push the parameter proted, populated with the exact stock keeping unit, or CQ, that matches your synchronized product catalog.
And if we don't?
If your tag does not push those exact custom parameters back to Microsoft servers, the backend algorithm is completely blind to the checkout flow. It categorizes the event as just another generic page view, literally dumping your highest value prospects directly into the general visitor pool.
Wow. Which means basic tag installation is really never a set it and forget it process.
Never.
The data foundation is entirely dependent on how accurately you map those custom UET parameters to the specific milestones within your user journey.
The intelligence of your remarketing is strictly bottlenecked by the context you choose to feed the tracking tag.
Okay, so we have our audiences fully constructed. The procurement officers are isolated, the intent is validated, and the cart abandoners are accurately tracked with custom parameters.
Ready to launch.
The final critical phase is applying these highly specific lists to our live campaigns without accidentally strangling our overall search volume. And this requires translating Google Ads terminology into Microsoft's framework, which trips people up.
Oh, the terminology mismatch causes significant structural errors for marketers migrating platforms.
Let's clear it up.
When you associate any audience list with a campaign or ad group in Microsoft Advertising, you must choose one of two distinct delivery modes. The default configuration is called bid only.
Okay, and bid only functions identically to the observation mode within Google Ads, right?
That is correct. In bid-only mode, the baseline reach of your campaign remains unchanged. Your ads will continue to serve to anyone who matches your standard keyword targeting.
So it doesn't limit reach.
Right. However, if a searcher happens to simultaneously be a member of your associated audience list, the system applies your predetermined bid adjustment.
Got it.
This mode guarantees maximum search volume while allowing you to bid far more aggressively for the high-value segments you have identified. The alternative, much stricter setting is target and bid,
which correlates to Google's targeting mode.
Yes. Selecting target and bid heavily restricts your campaign's delivery. The system will now exclusively serve ads to users who exist within that specific audience list.
Show me the people on the list.
Exactly. If a user searches your exact match keyword, but their profile is not actively logged in your audience pool, they will never see your ad. The restriction is absolute.
So due to that severe volume limitation, target and bid is generally reserved for highly specialized remarketing, whereas bid only is the standard for layering in-market or LinkedIn data onto broader search campaigns.
That's the best practice, yes.
Okay, but the mechanics of those bid adjustments require careful mathematical consideration. In Microsoft advertising, audience bid adjustments offer an incredibly wide spectrum. Like, you can adjust bids anywhere from negative 100% up to positive 900%.
Yeah, it's a huge range. And when you link a new audience, the system automatically applies a default positive 15% adjustment, which obviously needs immediate optimization.
Let's look at a negative scenario. Say I'm reviewing my data and a specific demographic segment is just performing terribly, bleeding our daily budget.
Yeah.
My immediate reaction is to set a negative 90% bid adjustment to effectively suppress that audience and stop showing them ads.
And that instinct relies on a severe misunderstanding of how the auction algorithm functions.
Wait, really?
Yeah, applying a negative 90% bid adjustment does not suppress ad delivery in any way.
It doesn't remove them from the auction.
Not at all. It merely enters your keyword into the second price auction with a heavily discounted maximum bid.
Oh, I see.
So if the current auction environment lacks intense competition, or if your base keyword bid was already set exceptionally high, a 90% reduction might still clear the minimum bid threshold.
So if my bid was $10, I'm still bidding a dollar.
Exactly. Your ad will still successfully serve to that poorly performing audience, and you will continue to pay for those clicks.
Ouch.
If your goal is absolute suppression-like, guaranteeing that a specific audience segment never triggers your ad, you are required to use a true negative audience exclusion. Alternatively, applying a bid adjustment of mathematically negative 100% achieves the identical result of total suppression. But a negative 90% adjustment simply buys you a cheaper click. It does not stop the bleeding.
Wow. Understanding that a negative 90% adjustment is a discount, not an exclusion, saves immense wasted spend. Now, before we close out, we must define where these audiences are actually viewing our creatives. The standard Bing search engine results page is obvious, but Microsoft leverages a massive secondary placement layer called the Microsoft Audience Network.
Yes, the Audience Network. It represents Microsoft's native cross-device display and video ecosystem.
Where does that actually show up?
It places your creative assets directly into the feed across premium properties. So we are talking MSN, Microsoft Outlook interfaces, the broader Microsoft 365 ecosystem, Microsoft casual games, and a highly vetted network of third-party publisher partners.
Okay, so if I actively build a campaign and set the campaign type explicitly to audience, ignoring the search network entirely, where does the delivery algorithm place those ads?
Pure audience campaigns are geographically locked to the Microsoft Audience Network. They are physically incapable of ever appearing within standard text-based search results.
Okay. But what about my search campaigns?
The nuance lies in how standard search campaigns bridge the gap between the two networks. By default, a standard search campaign is restricted entirely to the search results page. The only technical method to allow a standard search campaign to syndicate its reach out into the audience network is by manually attaching image ad extensions to the campaign. The platform requires visual creative assets to unlock network eligibility.
Okay. Let's consolidate the technical workflow we have just outlined for everyone listening.
Yeah.
Because copying your Google Ads structure directly into Microsoft advertising is just a guaranteed path to inefficiency.
A very expensive path.
Yeah. First, universal event tracking is your non-negotiable data foundation. And successfully running dynamic remarketing demands, pushing custom parameters like page type and protid to categorize the user context.
Got on.
Second, utilizing LinkedIn profile targeting is your primary mechanism for identifying verified professional decision makers, provided you avoid triggering the algorithmic privacy traps by stacking too many filters.
keep the pool big enough?
Third, in-market audiences offer massive pools of proprietary first-party intent. But their segregated architecture forces you to use concurrent bid adjustments rather than just lazily throwing them into combined lists.
Yeah, you have to do the manual work there.
And finally, mathematically understanding the auction difference between a negative 90% discount and a true negative exclusion protects your campaign's efficiency.
Exactly. The architecture really demands a completely different strategic approach. And as you adjust your campaign builds, you have to consider the sheer scale and interconnected nature of Microsoft's proprietary identity graph.
It's kind of mind-blowing when you zoom out.
It is. This is an infrastructure that simultaneously analyzes the exact queries you type into a search engine, cross-references your current corporate hierarchy and professional tenure via LinkedIn, monitors how you manage your daily schedule through Outlook, and even tracks how you choose to spend your recreational downtime within the Xbox and casual games ecosystem.
The depth of that unified behavioral profile is honestly unparalleled in the industry.
It truly is. And the ultimate question for performance marketers is this. As that unified profile becomes increasingly sophisticated, constantly fed by interconnected data streams across both professional and personal environments, how long will it be until the advertising model shifts entirely?
Shifts from what to what?
From reacting to a keyword you just typed to algorithmically predicting your necessary purchases before your hands even touch the keyboard.
Building campaigns that predict intent rather than chasing it. That is the future of the platform. You are operating in a distinctly different environment now, and it is time to fully leverage the engineering behind it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.